So the reasons that I wanted to do a shiur like this is a twofold, maybe even threefold. Number one, the other week I was zocha to be able to stand in for Rabbi Ryan,
give an address
to Kehila.
It's great.
Thank you. And I just mentioned the idea, you know, there's so much that we do to prepare for Pesach, the cleaning, and the shopping, and the cooking, and the selling. There's so much that we do, and it can be hard to find time to prepare for the neshama of Pesach, to prepare for, you know, what the Yom Tov is all about, learning about the ideas of Pesach, which is so important. And we often miss that, and then we come to the Seder, and we are all tired from Erev Pesach and the previous days, and, you know, it can be hard to really get into it. So, for one, I wanted to take the time. We have, this is in the context of a shiur, where, you're already coming to the shiur, good time to just start learning the ideas of Pesach. Number two is that the Haggadah itself is very rich. There's a lot in there. There's a lot hidden in there. And really, the Haggadah is what shapes the entire Seder. That's what Pesach is all about. And unfortunately, what's, again, difficult is that we come to the Seder, we're tired, it's late, and depending on this kind of Seder you go to, either it can just kind of be rushed and to get to the meal, or you can end up having somebody say a lot of ideas on the Haggadah at the Seder, and you're kind of thinking like, okay, let's get to the meal already. It's late, I'm hungry, tired, and we can kind of miss what's really hidden here in the Haggadah. So to take a couple of weeks before Pesach, before the Seder, when we're perhaps a little more calm, we can look at it and get a little of a taste of what the Haggadah is trying to convey to us, I think is a very good goal. Third reason, which really just relates back to those two things, is that I have both of these problems, that I I have a hard time finding the time to prepare for Pesach before, and I have a hard time, you know, at the Seder, you know, don't want to torture my family into having to, you know, study the Haggadah at the Seder then. So, thought this would be a good time for me, for you. And with that, let's get to it. Feel free to open up your own. Start with Halachma Anya, or Halachma Anya. I got to start. The head, the leader of the Seder, holds the matzah in his hand, stands up, and recites the following. Halachma Anya. This is the bread of affliction, poor man's bread. The achalu of a hasana ba'ar de Mitzrayim, that our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. Kol dichvin yese v'yechol, whoever is hungry, come and eat. Kol ditzrich yese v'yifsach, whoever is in need, let him come and celebrate Pesach, or as others translate it, let him come and take part of the Pesach offering. Hashata hacha, now we are here. Lashana haba be'aradi Yisrael. Next year, may we be in the land of Israel. Hashata avdi, now we are slaves, now we are servants, we're subjugated. Lashana haba b'nei chorin. Next year, may we be free. So there are a couple of classic, well-known, intuitive questions on this section of the Haggadah. Number one is that what it seems to be is an invitation to whoever is in need to come and join us for the Pesach meal, which presumably would have been a lot more effective had it been maybe outside, maybe the door open, maybe at shul, maybe before Pesach would have been ideal. to sit here inside the door closed, announcing this to those gathered already, to all the places already set and the food's already made for whoever it's made for, doesn't seem to be a very effective way of inviting people to a meal. Number two is that, you know, as some translate it, whoever is in need, come and take part of the Pesach, the Karban Pesach, Pesach offering. A very strange invitation. In fact, one that does not make any sense whatsoever. Because the Karban Pesach was such that the halacha is that you cannot have a Karban Pesach and then invite someone to come eat from it with you. The halacha of the Karban Pesach is that it can only be eaten by those who had gathered together before it was shechted and before it was offered up to go ahead and take part in it and be counted as those who would be involved in partaking of it. So you had to have signed on to this Karban Pesach before it was shechted to come and have it afterwards would actually be usher. So what would that mean? To be inviting them for that. And number three, just very simply, you know, why is this? Why is this the beginning, the start of the Seder? Fair questions?
Fair questions.
Okay. So it's like this. There are a number, obviously, very many answers to these questions. Focus on one tonight, which is that just like many things we do that are joyous, say a wedding, right? Where it's a happy occasion, we want to be a happy occasion, we make it as happy as we can, but it's always with the recognition of Mishkachich Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini, that Yerushalayim, we have to remember, is not with us, not in the way it should be, and that as much as we're at a happy time, but things aren't complete. Things aren't the way they should be. We're in Golos. The Shekhinah, Hashem's presence, is in Golos. That's why at a wedding, we'll break a glass. That's how we sing in Mashkachich at a wedding often. And that's what we're doing here. What we're doing is we're lamenting that we're having this Pesach Seder, as great as it is, and as much of an opportunity as it is, and it's a great time, but it's not complete. It's not in Yerushalayim. It's not in Eretz Yisrael. It's not with the Karban Pesach. So we get up and we say, Holach Ma'anya. All we have is this matzah. That's all we have. Some say that it's not just that it's our forefathers that had it. It's Holach Ma'anya for us. This is our sign of being in poverty. This is our sign of our golos. And it's the same thing that our forefathers had in their golos. What's the raya? What's the proof to that? The proof is that we can invite anybody in. We're not actually inviting somebody in. But it's a declaration. We're saying, look, we could invite anybody in to eat with us. If we were having the Karban Pesach, we couldn't do that. So we're lamenting over here that we're having a second-rate Seder. We don't have the Karban Pesach, which is, you know, the highlight, one of the highlights of certainly Erev Pesach and of the Seder itself. So we want to go in with that reminder, with that focus, that we're going to do our mission tonight. We have a lot to accomplish tonight. But even by the end, it's not going to be complete. And Hashata Hacha, Hashana Ababa Arad Yisrael, this year it's here. Next year may it be in Eretz Yisrael. And that's how, of course, we end the Seder as well. Hashana Ababa Yerushalayim. We have to go in with that reminder. I'll just add in, just as on a little technical note, that this portion of the Haggadah is unique in that it is in Aramaic. The entire rest of the Haggadah is in Hebrew, and this is in Aramaic. And that is because at a time when it was first instituted, it actually was meant to be an invitation for people outside to come in and join the Seder. According to the Malvim Haggadah that I have here, it would be said not at the Seder itself, but before the Seder. before Pesach. And you would, yes, you would invite people in to join you for your Korban Pesach and to join you beforehand. So they would, so they could take part with you after it was shechted. And because it was instituted in Bavel, where the language, the spoken language, was Aramaic, so it was written in Aramaic so that everybody could understand it. Yes. Well, I don't know as we know it. It was written by a Tana. It's, I believe so. Well, its authorship is somewhat of a mystery. We don't know exactly who wrote it. There are definitely parts of it, large sections of it, that are referred to in Gemara. But the actual composition of it and who it was is not readily available. Not known. Not a Navi that we know of. The Malach Magad actually wants, he goes through a little bit of analysis. In the beginning, he wants to suggest that it was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi who wrote the Mishnayos. He has different proofs, different interesting ideas to try and go ahead and suggest that. But it does not have anyone's name signed onto it.
And is it like, is the Haggadah like Torah where it's identical no matter where you are?
I think there are actually some slight differences. I don't know if it. I don't think it has to do so much with Sephardi Ashkenazi, but there are definitely different, slight differences in the text. Like, for example, in Halach Ma'anya. So some texts don't have Halach Ma'anya, they have Kiholach Ma'anya. That it's like, not this bread, but something like this bread. So there may be actual differences in the meaning based on that, but nothing major. Okay. With that, we'll dive straight into Manishtana. Without reading it inside, we'll just go through it outside, and we'll discuss the issues that are involved with understanding Manishtana. So Manishtana, you know, the four questions. Why do we specifically eat matzah tonight? Why specifically maror? Why do we dip twice tonight? We normally don't dip. Right, tonight we dip twice, then we dip the charosas, and then we dip in the salt water with the karpas. And the fourth thing is, why do we lean? So, just a couple of questions. The way that this is described in the Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, is that there's a minhag that many, many families do, is that at this point, before the Manishtana, the Seder plate is removed from the table in order to get the kids to ask questions. Like, hey, why are you doing that? Right? No other reason than that. And the way it seems to be presented is that it's supposed to lead into asking the Manishtana. So the obvious question is that I don't think it ever actually happened, probably, in the course of history, that a child or an adult was inspired to ask these specific four questions because the Seder plate was removed from the table. The Seder plate being removed from the table doesn't seem to relate to this, unless they're just like, hey, that's different. And by the way, once that's different, you know, what's up with all these other things? Those things haven't even happened yet. The other things that are going to be asked about haven't happened yet, that they should be, the kids should have seen them to ask about them. And to expect that, certainly, that everybody should be inspired to ask the same four questions, it doesn't seem to make too much sense. That's question number one. Question number two, classic questions. There are two other things that are unique to the Seder night, aside from the Haggadah itself. One is the four cups of wine. Two is the Korban Pesach. And why are these two things left out of the four questions? I guess it would have been six questions. Why are those left out? Number three. The halacha by Manishtana is, well, let's go into the minhag first. The minhag is that the children ask the Manishtan. Says the Shulchan Aruch, if you don't have children, no children at the table, it's just you and your wife, so your wife should ask the question. And you can respond with Avadam Hayinu.
Younger than you? What if you're younger than your wife?
I don't think it matters. I think the point is, presuming that you're the assuming that you're the head of the Seder, that you're running the Seder, you're heading it, so then she'll ask and you'll respond with Avadam Hayinu, which is the response for the Manishtana. If you're alone and you are having your Seder by yourself, then guess what? You should still ask the Manishtana, should ask the four questions to yourself. And the obvious question is going to be, why? Okay. Why are you asking yourself a question? So the answer to all these things really kind of revolves around one idea. First of all, there are really two things. Yes, certainly, it's a big focus at the Seder to get the kids to ask questions. There are things we do to get them to ask, to involve them. That's important. That is what we're doing when we remove the Seder plate from the table. But it's not to get them to ask the Manishtana. Separate thing. They should be inspired to ask questions. Fine. Manishtana is something separate. Something that Chazal put together. They said that you should ask these four questions. Why? What is the point of the Manishtana? The point of the Manishtana is to be kind of a summary of the entire Haggadah, the entire Seder night. See, the point of the Seder night, and we'll get more into this, this is going to be a theme that I'll run throughout the Haggadah, is that the point of Pesach, really, is to remember, to recount the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, to talk about what happened, to remember what happened, to recognize the great kindness that Hashem did for us, that He took us out of Mitzrayim with great miracles, the great love that He expressed to us, and He reached out to us, and He took us out to be this new nation for the first time, really. That would be the chosen nation that would be close to Him. This was Hashem's beginning of creating that relationship with us as a people. And it's supposed to inspire us, to invoke emotion in us, to reciprocate, to say, Hashem loves me so much. This is a good time for us to try and awaken and arouse emotions of love towards Hashem as well.
Is it based fundamentally on the halacha that we should remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at the end of Shacharis and Siddur, one of the six remembrances? I mean, is that basically where it comes from, based on what you're saying?
Actually, not quite. That is a mitzvah that accompanies many mitzvahs that we have all the time. The specific myth from the Torah, "V'garta l'bencha b'yom ha'hu," that you should tell your child, your son, on that day, which refers to Pesach, that Pesach is specifically set aside, not just to remember it, but to spend time talking about it and really focusing on it. Because, you know, we have a lot of things to focus on, a lot of areas to grow, things that we should be working on all the time. Our relationship with Hashem is one of them. Our Hakaras HaTov to Hashem is one of them. It's a major one. But to have a time that's set aside to focus on it and to really make that the prime focus of the Yontif, of specifically of the Seder night, it's like just a renewal of that relationship. To, you know, again, anything is like that. That something should be true, should be worked on constantly. But to have a time to really focus on it and make it, okay, this is my job tonight, to make it new and to really feel it, that's important. And that's what Pesach's about. It's more than just the daily remembering of it. It's meant to be a time to really, really focus on it. The Manishtana, we ask about four things. We mention four things. Matzah, maror, dipping, and leaning. Matzah and maror both symbolize the idea of hardship, of being down. Matzah does symbolize both freedom and hardship, but in this context, and you know, more readily visible, is
freedom
and
hardship, though.
So
separate concepts.
Okay, maybe true. But well, even before that, it represents hardship by itself. It's poor man's bread. You know why it's called that, by the way?
So simple.
It's very simple. It's something the Gemara says because it takes less fuel to make it. Because you cook it fast and you can save your fuel. Someone I gave this year last night. Also, someone was saying, I think I've heard this elsewhere, that I think it digests slower, it might stay in your system for longer. So it's something a poor person would eat. Right? And, you know, it doesn't have that rich bread-like feeling, right? It's not
challah.
Right? It's not challah. It's a symbol of poverty, of being low. Maror, certainly, is mar, bitter, represents the hardship. Karpas, dipping the karpas into the charoses, the dipping, one of the dippings. Sorry, the karpas into the salt water, but then going from that to dipping the maror into the charoses, that's the transition. You know, the maror is bitter, and the charoses is sweet. So it's going from the bitter into the sweet. Also, dipping itself is just a symbol of high class, of wealth, that typically foods that are dipped are, it can add as you have ketchup, and you can dip anything into ketchup. But a dip is usually some kind of nicer food, more of a delicacy. So it's a symbol of wealth. Leaning, even though we don't relate to it so much, but leaning also used to be a big symbol of wealth, that the wealthy would lean and they would... when they ate. Even we can relate to it somewhat, that, you know, when you lean, it's more leisurely, you're relaxed. It's a symbol of being, of not having, being without pressure. Symbol of wealth.
Most people still do lean, though, now?
At the Seder?
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, you have to.
But different minhagim about how you lean?
I'm not aware of it. As far as I know, you just, at certain points of the Seder, by all of the cups of wine, and by certain eatings of the matzah, lean to the left. By the way, I think that it does not mean to do this.
Yeah, I've always, that's like, that's not leaning in comfort.
No, I think, I do more like this, you know. Relax, you know, can you put your feet up if you want, you know, if it's feasible.
Okay.
So yeah, it's more leisurely, relaxing. Chazal say, and this really is manifest later in the Haggadah in a larger way, but it starts here. Chazal say that when we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim on the Seder night, we're supposed to be Maschil Bignus, start off with our low point, U'Mesayim B'Shevach, and we end off with the high point. The idea being that to say, wow, Hashem, you did such a nice thing for me, and to feel that, to really feel Hakaras HaTov, that's one level of Hakaras HaTov. That's one level of emotion that you could feel. But to feel that I was so low, I had it so hard, it was so difficult and bad, and Hashem, you took me out of that, and you brought me to be so high, when we think of it in the contrast, not just, wow, thank you so much for that gift, but wow, look what a difference that gift made to me. Look how that changed my life so profoundly. That was such a contrast from before what you did for me to afterwards. That's a whole new level of Hakaras HaTov. That's a whole new level of feeling that we can inspire ourselves to feel to Hashem. what he did for us. And right at the beginning of the Seder, we say the Manish Tana to express this progression. Matzah, maror, it's bitter, it's poor. We start off low, and then we go into karpas, the dipping, the transition. When I say karpas, it's the maror, and the necharosas, and to leaning, into wealth. And right that way, at the very beginning of the Seder, you can try and evoke those feelings. Inspire us. Why is it asked as a question in that case? Let's just say it. I think the answer, I may have seen this, but if I didn't, I still think it's true, is that when you ask something as a question, you involve yourself in it more, you engage yourself more.
Sure.
Right, it's for sure true between, you know, two people in a teacher student setting, that in order to engage the students, ask a question, get involved, even for yourself, you know, to look at the matzah and say, wow, this matzah I'm eating because we were slaves in Egypt, and this mar I'm eating because we were slaves in Egypt, and the dipping I'm doing because now we're wealthy, and the leaning I'm doing because now we're wealthy. That's one way to say it. Or you could look at the matzah, you could say, why do I have this matzah? Think about it, why do I have this? Oh, it's because I was poor. Why do I have this bar? Why am I dipping? To express it as a question and answer it, even when you're by yourself, it inspires you more. It gets you more, it engages your mind more in the process. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the Seder. It's great to have the intellectual part of it. What we're looking for really is the emotion. We're looking to get you invested in this. You should really, really feel the appreciation. You could focus on it, think about it, see how much you benefit from this, and use that to elevate yourself and to get yourself closer to Hashem and to want to reciprocate and say, wow, Hashem, you did this for me. I want to be close to you too. That's we're already getting into that with the Manish Tana. Okay. Let's move on to Avodim Hayinu. Oh, by the way, okay, I forgot the other two questions about the wine and the Pesach and the Korban Pesach. So the Korban Pesach is not really a question, because it actually was part of the original text of the Manish Tana. It used to be there was no question about leaning, and there was a question about the Korban Pesach. That certainly represents our ultimate freedom from Mitzrayim. But once we no longer brought the Korban Pesach, and it wasn't a feature of our Seder, so we replaced it with a leaning.
Okay.
As far as the four cups, so the answer really just has to do with what the purpose of the Manish Tana is. The four cups, as much as it's true that they were set up to correspond to the four different terms of Geula, of redemption that Hashem used when he spoke to Moshe, so they definitely do have to do with the Geula from that hardship, but they don't physically represent anything that has to do with wealth. There's nothing in the fact that you're having four cups of wine, you're having four specifically tonight, that reminds you in any way, in any tangible way, of the idea of freedom. And as such, it doesn't have any place in Manish Tana, because that's not what the purpose of the Manish Tana is.
Got it.
All right. So next we have the response. Avodim hayinu lepar v'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim. We say both Paro and Mitzrayim, even though both would have alone, either one of those would have expressed the same idea, right? If it's Paro, obviously it was in Mitzrayim. If it was Mitzrayim, obviously it was to Paro. But we say both to express that it was to a cruel monarch, a cruel king, Paro, and in a cruel nation, Mitzrayim. But we had everything going, everything was against us. Vayotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham, and Hashem, our God, took us out of there, Biyad Chazaka, with a strong hand. He hit them hard. That's a strong hand of his row and a tuya, and with an outstretched arm, which means that his role in taking us out of Mitzrayim was clearly visible. There was no mistaking that it was Hashem. If the Holy One, blessed be He, if Hashem would not have taken us out of Mitzrayim, Hare Anu Vanenu Vnevanenu Meshubadim Hayinu Lepar Mitzrayim. Behold, us and our children and our children's children would still be subjugated to Paro in Mitzrayim. Therefore, Vafilu Kolanu Chachamim, even if we're all wise, Kulanu Nevonim, we're all understanding. Wise means that we have a lot of knowledge. Nevonim means we can apply that knowledge and gain new knowledge from our old knowledge. Kulanu Zekenim, we're old and experienced, and we've been through this Seder idea a million times. Kulanu Yodim HaTorah, we all are very well versed in the Torah. We're even more than Chachamim. We have profound knowledge of the Torah. Even if we fit into one of those categories, or all of them, Mitzvah Aleinu L'Saper B'Yetzias Mitzrayim. It is still a mitzvah for us to recount the story of the departure from Egypt. V'kol ha-marbe l'saper b'yetzias Mitzrayim, harei zeh meshubach. Whoever, the more you talk about it, the better. So, a couple of interesting things here. Starting with the end. Why? Why, if we're all wise and knowledgeable, etc., why do we have to say it again? We know the story. We've been through it a million times. Why do we have to go through and talk about it? Why is it better to talk about it more and more and more? If you know the story, you know the story. Good to go. Number one.
Say the same thing about tefillah, though.
What do you mean?
You know tefillah. Why do you have to do it every day?
Tefillah is not just about what you know. Tefillah is an action. Right?
But isn't reciting the Haggadah also an action?
Right, but the action, or you know, this question makes the assumption, it works based on the premise, that we're reading the Haggadah to know the story. So if we know the story, why read the Haggadah? Right? Davening you do because davening has an actual impact every time you daven. So yeah, I mean the answer is going to be, you know, that something is accomplished with each individual time. The question is, what is that?
Okay.
Another interesting thing that we start off saying we were slaves to Paro in Mitzrayim. We would sound like you and me and whoever else is present. And we go on later to say, and if Hashem had not taken our fathers out of Mitzrayim, then we would still be there. So make up your mind. Were we avadim? We were avadim. Let it say, if Hashem had not taken us out of Mitzrayim. Why does it say, if Hashem had not taken our fathers out? And if we're going to talk about our fathers, because we weren't there, let it say, our fathers were avadim to Paro Mitzrayim. What is it that we were? Okay, so apparently we're out of time. And we will, as Hashem, next week, pick up